Well, good afternoon, Juno. Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. We're going to be talking with Mark Whitman about the second annual Liars and Fiddlers Consort. Judith Bedersky will be coming in to talk about Medicare with us, and John Hatton will be here from the Kentucky Clodhoppers, and we have a special excerpt from the Mudroom series. Weather forecast for Juno is for mostly cloudy. The high is around 53, variable winds to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Lows around 34, northeast winds 10 to 35 miles per hour. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy with the highs around 53. The forecast today was for cloudy, but if you take a look outside, we sure got a lot of sun.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A federal appeals court reinstates a lawsuit by members of a Native American church in Honolulu, Hawaii, challenging drug laws. According to the Honolulu Star Advertiser, the lawsuit was reinstated Monday by the 250 members seeking to halt federal drug prosecution against its members for using marijuana. The group claims their use of marijuana is protected by the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and the First Amendment. In 2009, federal authorities seized a pound of marijuana from FedEx. The court dismissed part of the lawsuit seeking compensation for the seizure. A school in Buffalo Grove, Illinois, is retiring its Indian mascot. According to the Associated Press, Aptakissick Junior High is changing its mascot to the Eagles after more than five decades being known as the Indians. Dropping Indian mascots in the state at the collegiate level has been controversial, including the 2007 retirement of Chief Alinowick at the University of Illinois. Tribal lands in southeast South Dakota are headed for another night of freezing temperatures after a very mild winter and unseasonably warm start to spring. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Overnight temperatures were very cold in many locations in the Midwest. A freeze warning extended from northern Wisconsin through Minnesota and Iowa and into southeast South Dakota. People on land belonging to the Yankton Sioux and Flandreau tribes in South Dakota dealt with temperatures that fell well below freezing. Carrie Hinko with the National Weather Service in Sioux Falls says another freeze warning is in store for tonight.
We've got this cold pattern that's going to stick around for the next several days. Tomorrow night we're looking at lows once again to fall below freezing for the vast majority of the area. We get into Wednesday night into Thursday and we do see some warmer overnight temperatures coming in. But that's going to be a function of another storm system moving through. So we're going to have some clouds, a little bit more wind to keep those temperatures up and into the 40s at night.
Tonight's warning area follows roughly the same pattern as the one issued Monday. After highs that approached 90 degrees earlier this month, forecast temperatures for the area are expected to be closer to normal. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Sea Alaska Heritage Institute has published a book documenting Native place names. The book's title in English is Our Grandparents' Names on the Land. It has more than 3,000 place names and their locations in southeast Alaska. It was compiled by Dr. Thomas Thornton and collaborated by hundreds of people, including tribal elders. Many of the names are in Tlingit, but there are also names in Haida, Tsimshian, and Athabascan. According to Thornton, Native place names differ from English place names, which are often biographical and commemorate people. He notes the vast majority of Native place names are descriptive. Sea Alaska Heritage Institute President Rosita Worrell says there's much more than just a name.
It's so much more than just a place name. It's tied to our social fabric, our social identity, our worldview, how we see the world, how our ancestors were using different sites.
The book took nearly 20 years in the making. Researchers collected information by recording names recalled by elders and compiling place names documented in the past by scholars. During this month in 2011, the Federation of Saskatchewan Indian Nations and the Métis Nation of Saskatchewan initiated a voting drive to urge members of Canada's First Nations to vote. The campaign's goal was to increase the number of Indigenous votes and inform members of the electoral process and issues they would be voting on. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Humboldt State University, part of the California State University System, offering a part-time, 3.5-year online Master of Social Work program, emphasizing work in rural and indigenous communities. A new semester begins January of 2013. Applications will be accepted in August. Learn more at humboldt.edu/social work. Support for National Native News comes from the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you are in tune with KTOO News, and I have in the studio with me an inveterate liar and a fiddle player. So that's a combination which is going to be putting on a little get-together tomorrow afternoon, and according to this, they're going to be in the Alaska State Museum, which I understand from Mark is the only building that they haven't actually been evicted from so far. Is this all true?
Well, actually, Pat, the fact that we're going to be doing this tomorrow is a lie. let me clarify that. It's going to be Saturday from
Saturday.
1 to 3.
It's going to be Saturday 1 to 3. Okay,
at the 14th. State Museum.
Okay, well.
Now that that falsehood has been dissipated,
I'm glad that you took care of the fact that I was trying to put one over on the radio audience. I mean, I have so few opportunities to do that, Mark.
Well, you were just exercising extrapolation of an opportunity to explain something that had yet to occur.
An amazing concept. Mm-hmm. Bob Banghart, the author of that little pontification. So, tell me what is happening on Saturday between 2 and 3, and don't lie.
I won't. We're making sacred the memory of Juneau's greatest perverter of the truth and hornswoggler, Uncle Dick Willoughby, who was responsible for the Silent City lie, which 1887. And we thought in memory of him, we should have a liars and fiddlers consort every year where people gifted in the art of persuasion, be it moral or immoral, can show up in public and really show us what they're capable of, just how low they can slither. And we came to the conclusion that the truth is just highly overrated in our culture. And we need to give good lies a chance to see the light of day.
Yeah, some place where they can be outed, more or less. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then, Bob, how do you come into this nefarious organization?
I am the fiddle equation of this, but also a member of the reptilian party
as
we slither into the dissertations that can both delight and deceive. But the festival was kind of born at the State Museum, and then last year when Mark had this idea, I thought this is perfect. You know, what better way to start something afresh? And capture those things that, as the festival itself can operate under, which is, you know, an undefeatable amount of human ego to drive the performance structure, why not use that same said human value of obstification of the particulars of clarification? So.
Uh-huh. Nicely put again. So now, Mozart is claimed to have written certain pieces of music that contained at least jokes, if not outright lies. Is it possible to lie with the fiddle?
Oh, absolutely. I can lie down easier than anything you ever want to see in the fiddle. I mean, there are times when lying down is the only recourse that one has to actually standing abreast of what it is your responsibilities are. But yes, no, music, Stravinsky, I believe, stated, you know, good artists borrow, great artists steal. So lying with music, I find it's more difficult to lie with music depending on your intent. You know, I always use the analogy of the visual cacophony we surround ourselves with. If we ascribe an element of sound to each one of these visual elements, we would go mad. So the ears have a tendency to sort things out a little bit more finely than the eye.
Certainly
but at the same time, we also let ourselves be convinced by a smooth, well-orientated voice that everything's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry. We have your best interests at heart.
And we're open. We're open to all members of our community. We have former members of the clergy, be they currently part of a congregation or defrocked. We have former politicians, people involved in the sale of automobiles, people who generally been tarred and feathered by the broader segment of our culture, they will be there showing us what a silver tongue can truly do. It's not to be underestimated.
Now, this is being billed as the second annual Liars and Fiddlers contest, and I'm not sure. Did one occur last year,
or did.
Is that another lie?
It did. I arranged everything, and then I escaped, ran out of town right as it started and left the basket in other people's hands.
There was attendance, and people delved into some fairly unique perspectives. I think one of the marked points of highlight for me was the individual who was able to truly identify the secret and the secret sauce of Colonel Sanders. And that was enlightening, the audience, after bringing themselves up off the floor and wiping their eyes, applauded graciously to the gentleman. It's all ages in a sense. What we're looking for is people just to expand their horizons. It's I always refer back to a statement by Marlon Fitzwater, Ronald Reagan's former press secretary, who says, quote, "The president did not mean what you thought he said." And I mean, that's, what a great encapsulation of the process of Robius speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what a marvelous venture to undertake. If someone wants to, or perhaps want is not the correct word, if someone is driven compelled,
a calling,
thank you, good
perhaps.
Word, yeah, a calling. Yes. If someone feels a vocation in prevarication,
yes.
How would he or she participate in this August event?
Well, you just have to show up.
That's it.
And you have to be bold.
Uh-huh.
I this is pure Americana. You have to visualize the country store with a semicircle of chairs and a large jug of corn liquor in the middle, and people on corn cob pipes, maybe a hunting dog sleeping in the corner, and one after another, people step forward to seize the baton of oratory and outdo one another. This is something that our country was founded on. Unfortunately, that televised box sort of took over, but we look forward to reviving a tradition that goes way back.
Mm-hmm.
So show up.
To a degree, we've already revived some of that tradition. I don't know, have either of you participated in one of the mudrooms experiences?
I've been to them, yes.
Yeah, that's very much the Chautauqua coming to Juneau almost, where we aren't sitting around the room debating some major issue, but we're certainly opening the floor to those who want to come and tell their story.
Yeah. And it is a form of sharing, but in this particular instance, we can allow for certain liberties,
yes,
with the perspectives that one might attribute to correct thought.
And if it's a few moments before someone pulls the corn cob pipe out of his mouth and steps forward, then we have the fiddle filling in along the way. Will there be some other players with you?
I have no idea. Last time we did this, it's just people came and showed up, and as the afternoon progressed, it became more animated and exaggerated. But when I got to the museum, there was two people there, and then by the time we quit, there was probably 20 there, and people came and stayed, and that they themselves, I never thought I was going to do anything but, and then they would tell a story. And Eric, the gentleman with the issues about Mr. Sanders, or the colonel there, he played fiddle and did the story at the same time.
Playing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It was his own musical.
That's an old tradition of actually telling the tale and accompanying yourself on the instrument, and it goes back to the beginnings of recorded history.
Mm-hmm. It's like mining. It starts off with one man, a miner, which is a liar standing next to a hole in the ground, and then with a promoter, you gather a circle of investors, and you achieve what's known as a circle of gold.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we hope to see, is a shining example of this kind of truth stretching. It's a great thing. It's a great thing.
Yeah. It allows you to see deeply into the human psyche to a point where you may not want to know.
Well, you may want to turn away and not see much more of the human psyche exposed in this fashion. I see. So those who who feel the vocation to prevaricate, as we said, should show up at the museum between 2 o'clock or 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock on Saturday.
The 14th.
Is there a part of the museum where they will there be signs, or will they somehow find themselves in the right place?
It'll be upstairs in one of the galleries. And
so you shouldn't just grab a person walking through the museum and tell your tale.
Clearly, Mark, there'll be breadcrumbs of the former lies in a clear path.
So one way or another, be able to find it, but it's probably going to be upstairs, right?
It will be upstairs.
Good. Okay. And if you want to come fiddle, you can. If you want to come lie, you certainly can. If you want to just come listen to the lies and fiddling, that certainly is the activity.
We consider that to be more expansive perspectives than actual lying. You know, myself. I mean, there are negative connotations with the aspect of lie unless you're doing a gravity thing and you're on the floor. But it's an expansive perception of reality.
Right.
Outstanding. Okay, 1 to 3 Saturday at the museum. Mark Whitman, Bob Banghart, thank you so much for coming down and introducing us to this aspect of Juno's
life. Thank you.
So let's take a quick look at the weather forecast, and I'm not lying about this. According to the Weather Bureau right now, we're experiencing mostly cloudy skies. If you look out your window, you may see a slightly different view of downtown Juneau, or at least the most of the Juneau area. We're having one of the nicest sunny days. We've had a string of them, and today's no thing like that. So ignoring mostly the fact that we are supposed to be mostly cloudy. The highs are around 53 right now, and they've been that way for the last couple, 3 hours, and variable winds are blowing downtown about 10 miles per hour. Not too much in the valley, I didn't feel when I left there earlier. Tonight's going to be mostly cloudy. The lows are going down to about what they did last night, about 34, so you probably have a little frost on the car windows in the morning. Northeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. And then Wednesday we're looking at, according to the Weather Bureau, mostly cloudy. But if it comes out like this, then what will happen is we'll get up, we'll see that overcast sky, we'll all put our coats on and everything like that. And then about, 10 o'clock in the morning, like it did today, it'll burn off and the sun will shine and it'll be beautiful. Wednesday night, like tonight, although it says a slight chance of rain showers. Well, we've had that before. Thursday, they're saying slight chance of rain showers again with mostly cloudy skies Thursday night. And Friday, partly cloudy, lows around 35, highs around 56. And then Friday night and Saturday night, mostly cloudy with the lows around 36 and like that. So we're talking about this lovely, wonderful weather having a really good chance of just continuing the way it is. So that is good news. And it's good news, too, about the fact that the Folk Festival is underway. Started last night with an interesting bunch of acts that began at 7 o'clock. Tonight it begins at 7. And if you tune to our sister station, KRNN, either on 102.1 or if you go to, that's 102.7, if you go to our stream on the website, you can click on KRNN and it'll bring it up on your computer so you can listen to the music there, or you can pick us up on, I believe they're on digital channel 873 on the cable system. So if you can't get down for the live music, you can tune it in and take a listen as you go about your business with the rest of the evening. So my next guest is here not to talk about folk festivals and weather and things like that, but to talk about a really, I think, important topic, and that is Medicare. Judith Benderski is with the State Department of Health and Social Services and says she handles literally hundreds of questions on a weekly basis about Medicare and its many aspects and like that. Hi, Judith.
Hi.
So what is your relationship to the Medicare program?
Well, my relationship is that I manage the SHIP program. Every state has a SHIP program, which is described in the Medicare literature and the Medicare handbook. And so another person and I manage a call center and answer questions from Alaskans about Medicare.
Ah, and interesting, with our population now, the segment that is uses Medicare the most, I think, is probably growing, particularly in Juneau. Has been for the last couple of census counts.
That's right. Baby boomers are staying or moving back, and so we have the fastest growing senior population in the country.
Yes. So your job has probably gotten more challenging over the time. How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this for 5 years. Wow. I didn't know anything about Medicare when I first started, and I would say I've got quite a lot of knowledge about Medicare banging around in my head.
Yeah. Who's eligible?
People that are 65 and older are eligible, and people who have been on Social Security disability for 24 months typically then get a red, white, and blue card in the mail, and they are on Medicare as well.
And so that's Medicare A, I think, right?
Well, typically the red, white, and blue card that people get have Medicare Part A and B, mm-hmm. and we can talk more about what those parts mean.
Could you?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, Medicare Part A is hospital, covers hospital, skilled nursing facility care, hospice care. And that's the part of Medicare that as you work and you pay your Medicare taxes to Social Security that you're covered for when you eventually have Medicare. Part B covers outpatient, doctor's visits, other types of therapy visits, labs, MRIs, durable medical equipment. And some other things, and that's the part that costs every American about $100 a month.
Mm-hmm. What, every American who's subscribed to Medicare.
Who is on Medicare,
yeah, right.
That's correct.
Okay.
But not everybody that's on Part A also is on Part B.
So are there any other parts?
There are other parts. There's Part C, which are Medicare Advantage plans, of which we have none in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Part D, as in drugs, which are prescription drug plans,
okay.
which we have 25 in Alaska.
Okay, and those are very complex. Let's come to them in a moment here.
Sure.
The Part B Medicare, now, if you are in particular, I was shocked to discover that when I retired under PERS, I got a notice saying that I had to subscribe to Part B Medicare and pay. And I didn't know that. And it came as kind of a surprise.
Yeah, that is the case. Anybody who has a retiree health plan, which kicks in when they are eligible for Medicare, has to have Medicare Part A and B to be primary. In other words, the federal government pays for your health care. The retiree health plan supplements that.
And it might be good to say, because I didn't know this either, is that you have to make that election at some point before you actually retire, I believe it is.
It's wise to give Social Security about 3 months to process your request to enroll in Medicare Part A and B. But if you're 65 or 68 or 73 and still working, you can delay enrollment.
Mm-hmm. In my case, those events occurred almost all at the same time. I retired when I turned 65 or just after I'd turned 65, and I had to wait a year before, or some period of time, it was some months, before another enrollment period opened up because I had not enrolled when I was eligible to earlier.
That's
and
right.
And no one told me about that, which was kind of interesting. It's a question you evidently have to ask rather than having anyone notify you of.
Well, yes and no. There are different enrollment periods, and 3 months before your birthday month, every individual in America that's working gets a Social Security statement. It's got a little green border on it, and that typically describes what your Social Security retirement will be if you're eligible for Medicare, and it tells you to call Medicare 3 months before you turn 65. But there are different enrollment periods, and so everybody's got a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if you have a spouse who's still working, even if you turn 65 and are retired, if your spouse has active employment and you have health insurance through that spouse, you can also delay signing up for Medicare.
Right. So there are lots of variables here, but I think the key lesson of this part of our discussion is that if you are nearing 65, you need sometime after your 64th birthday, you should probably call Judith, and make sure that you understand what you need to do in order to not have a break in coverage. Because in my case, I had a kind of a scary few months there where I really didn't have full coverage.
Yeah, that would be very scary. It's mm-hmm. good for people to call, go on to Medicare.gov, or go on to Medicare.alaska.gov, and kind of get your ducks in a row, and then tweak your plan about 6 months before you turn 65.
Mm-hmm.
We would be happy for people to call us, and I'll be happy to give you that
and
number.
And you can help with the tweaking and all that
Absolutely.
Sort of stuff.
Absolutely. We do Medicare tune-ups all the time.
Okay. Well, maybe after this program, I'll give you a call, and you can help me with that. So now let's go back to, a couple of confusing things. One is the prescription drug coverage. The way the law was enacted, there are these holes that we have to deal with. And do those affect Alaskans?
They do. The typical phrase is the donut hole,
mm-hmm.
And that is a gap in coverage. But if I could back up, first of all, not everybody needs to buy a Part D prescription drug plan. For instance, you covered under AlaskaCare already have pharmaceutical coverage, and so would people who have TRICARE or use the VA or have a federal retiree health plan.
Mm-hmm.
But people who don't have any other prescription coverage should consider buying a Part D plan and make a knowledgeable choice by having a counselor really help them pick one out.
Yeah, these things are complex enough that probably unless you're a druggist or you've worked for 8-5 years in an office that does Medicare counseling, you need help figuring which one of these is going to be the best advantage
Absolutely,
to you.
Absolutely, because you want to pick a drug plan based on your particular prescription needs and your particular pharmacy choice,
mm-hmm.
and whether you prefer to pay deductibles or higher premiums. So that's something my office does regularly. But there is a coverage gap, and it's complicated. Fortunately, under the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as some people call it, that coverage gap, that donut hole, is closing. But basically, you have good coverage up until the point that you and your drugs cost about close to $3,000. Then you're out of pocket several thousand dollars totally on your own before you have coverage again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the donut hole.
And that impacts several thousand Alaskans every year, and it's a terrible thing.
Is that going to change? Is there any legislation on the horizon that would change the situation with the donut hole?
Yes, the donut hole has actually been changing since 2010, and whereas a person used to be responsible for 100% of the cost of their brand name drugs while they were in the donut hole. They're now only responsible for 50% of the cost.
Yeah.
And then over time, that will be 40% and then 30%. So by 2020, the donut hole will be completely closed and there will not be a gap.
Now, I have a friend, and I was telling you about this just beforehand here, who I was having lunch with him one day, and he was fretting because he's currently having a medical condition taken care of, and it's being paid for by Medicare. And he realized to his horror that he was about 2 weeks late sending in his payment for Medicare, and he was quite frightened that they would discontinue his Medicare because he hadn't paid. How serious were his fears?
His fears were valid because nobody wants to be without health insurance. But this is how it works. Social Security is responsible for enrolling people and billing people for Medicare. So as long as Social Security has your correct address, they're going to send you the Medicare Premium Payment Center is going to send you two notices telling you that you're delinquent in paying for your Medicare premiums.
Those are after the notice that says your payment's due.
Correct. And then you will get a third notice, and that will be the final notice telling you that you will be disenrolled. Now, the alternative way to pay for your Medicare premium is if you get a Social Security retirement benefit, have that auto-deducted from your Social Security retirement benefit. And that's what most Americans do. But a lot of people are 65 on Medicare and not yet cashing in on that Social Security retirement benefit. Mm-hmm. So they actually get a bill in the mail and have to pay it.
Yeah, my friend and I are both in that same circumstance. So we haven't either one opted yet because we still have a little ways to go and there's a benefit to waiting out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I guess the only other question I had is if someone is in a situation where they're being required to enroll in Medicare, and there's no way they could come up with the money.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any out?
Well, there's two answers to that question. There is an out. Nobody's going to hold a gun to anybody's head saying you have to sign up for Medicare. So a person could just disenroll. Or they could contact my office. There is a Medicare savings program, which is a way that the state of Alaska will help people pay that Medicare premium if they have a low enough income. And so there are very distinct guidelines of income and resources. And if people meet those guidelines and fill out an application, the state will cover that monthly premium for the individual.
Judith Bendersky, you are a resource that I didn't know you existed, and I'm really glad to meet you. I see the poster here that says that you do exist, and I have a copy of your business card. And what are you saying to me there?
There's a seminar this evening
at
the Juno Senior Center from 6 until 8 p.m. I'll be going over the moving parts of Medicare, and I will be available Wednesday for one-on-one counseling.
At that session and afterward?
At a different location, and when I give you my phone number, people can call me and set up appointments.
Okay, and they can set them up. Good. Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming forward and telling us about this information, and I'm sure there are some folks out there who will want to know what's up. So once again, the time at the Senior Center is?
6 until 8 p.m. this evening, April 10th, at the Juno Senior Center.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
When I get older, losing my hair, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door?
yeah, this is a great little upcoming seminar tonight. I'm sorry, April 10th from 6 to 8, yes, tonight at the Juno Senior Center. And we did not remember to give her telephone number when we were talking to her, but Judith Benderski, the representative from the state government who helps with Medicare problems, can be reached if you have questions while she's here or you want to make appointments at this cell number. Write it down, 907-230-1935. So if you want to talk to her while she's in town, that's the way to do it. And if you want to drop by the Juno Senior Center between 6 and 8 p.m., she can answer your questions about Medicare there. Okay? Good enough. So my next guest is a guy that we all know, but we probably none of us or most of us don't know his name. This is John Hatton, and John is the helpful man who sits out in front of the music festival with a huge booth full of CDs that covers not only the music that you're hearing in the music festival, but also a wide range of other things. And he also has accessories, guitar strings, some of this, some of that, and a couple of the other things.
And ukuleles.
And ukulele. Well, welcome to the show, John. Which of these did you want me to play at the end?
Let's go with track 19.
Track 19. Okay, yeah. Good. All right. While we get talking here, I'll stick that up. Okay, so, John, you are also a member of a group called the Kentucky Clodhoppers. Are you performing at the festival?
No, we're not performing at the festival.
Oh, okay. Are you performing in the halls around the festival?
Well, sort of, yeah. I mean, in the greater sense of the halls around the festival, because we consider all of Juno to be fair game in a lot of ways for things that go on for the festival.
Isn't that an amazing thing about the festival? I swear, there downtown at least, there's probably not 6 square feet of real estate that doesn't hold a fiddle player, 2 bassists, some guy playing the hand drums, and somebody else on Irish flute. You know,
you'll find all kinds of things. One year we had a session with bassoon and concertina, and I brought my ukulele in, and we had a wonderful jam right there in Centennial Hall. So
I can't remember. Is it Stravinsky who wrote the symphony for ukulele and kettle drum?
I think that was way before my time. I don't remember.
Anyway, so John, how long have you been running the booth out there?
Here at Centennial Hall, I've been doing this since 2001, 2002. Somewhere in there.
Did you
so
just
good 10 or 11
did
years.
You just wander in with a box of CDs and set up, and then somebody said, "Who's he?" Is that
no. This started way back in the 80s when a bunch of musicians from Alaska had come to the Brandywine Fiddlers Convention. In at that time, it was at Uncle Bob's farm in Fairhill, Maryland, and people that I knew from the old time music community came up and said, "You should come to Alaska. They'd love this up there." Mm-hmm. And it's been downhill ever since.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a booth that travels all over between Alaska and Alabama and coast to coast. And so I like to say that, you know, there are some things that are transmitted by carriers who travel, but this is musically transmitted stuff, and it's stuff that I collect at one festival, so it's new for the next festival, and everybody benefits, and it's a positive thing.
Right.
So
as you've gone then to all of these festivals, your collection has grown. The question, I guess, has to do with how music is being, how independent music is being transmitted these days. I mean, we're hearing about a lot of people who have decided now to put their music out on the internet and let anybody download it, just basically to get exposure. Other people, I guess, believe in or are still cutting CDs. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's doing cassette tape anymore or anything like that, although maybe they are. And it's interesting to me that now we're seeing a move back to vinyl in the recording industry because it's supposed to be purer or something, or maybe it's the suffering factor that people like. I'm not sure. But how does a musician who is serious about their career, how do they get their voice heard?
Well, the internet is certainly probably the most affordable way to do things these days, especially the Facebook and YouTube kind of connection. There's lots of different files that one could use to get yourself noticed. And not being really technical savvy or techno savvy for all this stuff, the modern stuff, I don't know. Curious, you mentioned cassettes. I got a phone call from a friend a year ago who was down in Austin, Texas, and he said, John, you're not going to believe this, but people are trading cassettes down here like I've never seen before. And he'd seen it before, but it was 20 years
yeah,
earlier.
Yeah.
And the thing is that LPs, a lot of us grew up with that, and it was that tactile thing of pawing through things. Mm-hmm. And the CDs are the same way, except they're smaller. And, you know, that was fine. And cassettes, you could sort of do that when they put them in the tall mm-hmm. cards that had the do not steal this cassette button that was attached to it, so you had to have it disconnected before you left the store. But I think people are very much aware of what's around them and what will work best. It just depends on where you're at. I mean, there's a lot of people that do this free thing, and you had mentioned exposure, but I always try and remind musicians that people die from exposure. So we don't want to do, you know, too much free exposure.
Yeah.
Although I guess what I'm doing right now is free exposure, but you know, for the festival and everything else. So yeah, you do certain amounts of that, but you want to be careful how much you do.
When people come by the stand, do they come looking for, well, I imagine there's both kinds, but do they come looking for a particular artist? Do people come out looking just to kind of leaf through and see what they can find? Which way does it go?
It goes all different ways. Some okay. people come up and say, who's the best fiddler? Which is a question that it can't be answered because it changes every day, just yeah. like technology. Uh-huh. It depends on what you're interested in. You know, I try and talk to people and find out what kind of music they like or don't like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who have you heard? Things like that. Most of the people that we carry at the booth are not on a major label. It's mostly the indie labels, the smaller stuff, especially the people that are playing there on stage throughout the week. Now, the guest artists may have something that's out on a major label. At least some of the people that are in that group I do know have been on major labels, so or larger labels than mm-hmm. some. There's some labels that don't exist anymore because they just wanted to up and retire, or they thought the market wasn't going to provide them an income anymore. But I just got back from Hawaii, and I was trying to pick up some of the labels over there, and most of the labels were able to accommodate me at the price point that I was usually able to deal with things, mm-hmm. So that I don't have to charge $20 or $30 for a CD. But there was one label of independence over there that, you know, I'm still debating whether or not to carry their products because it's just way too expensive.
Mm.
And if they think that they're not selling many now, then, you know, at that price point, you know, it's just cheaper all the way around for people to just go to the internet and find that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which is too bad, but especially for the artists that are on there, because I think that with what I can offer them as an outlet, they can, you know, find an audience that's very broad and very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
So,
John, where are you based?
I'm out of Michigan.
Oh, okay.
Which, oddly enough, I have to tell the story that I embarrassed myself before I left. I had to mow my lawn March 27th, and you know, we're the same latitude pretty much.
Yeah. It's close.
Yeah,
it's close in Juneau.
Right.
I was looking at my lawn this weekend. And
but 3 weeks ago, it was 83 degrees for a whole week.
We haven't quite had that yet.
And now it's going down to 34 tonight. So
yeah.
It's more like Juneau weather. So.
Right. So you come up every year for the festival.
I do.
Yeah, you get a couple of days on either side to see the
glacier. Yeah, I try and stay up here for at least 10 days.
Uh-huh.
So.
Do you do any other sales outside of the festival? Do you set up any place else?
No, I do a lot of community outreach stuff. We play. Mm-hmm. I gather musicians that are up here from around the country and the area and Canada.
You got a for instance? What are you going to be doing? Have you found anybody?
We're playing at the senior center, the Pioneer Home.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to be playing at the Head Start program out in the valley. And I try and do that every year. And you know, if there's other people that want that, you know, kind of entertainment.
Yeah.
and I'm sure
sort of a rolling jam session.
Yeah, and I try and do that so that we can get exposure for the festival, let's say.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a goodwill kind of thing,
uh-huh.
and it's a gesture to the community to help them know that we're out there for them, and it's kind of helping spread folk music in this area.
What other big festivals do you do?
Oh, let's see. The biggest one is the old-time string band gathering in Clifftop, West Virginia. That's
okay.
Probably one of the biggest. We still do the Wheatland Festival in Michigan, which is a big one in the Midwest. We occasionally do the Indiana Fiddlers Gathering. We're starting to do the Moorhead State, Moorhead Old Time Music Festival in Moorhead, Kentucky. We do things in Olympia, Washington, Ole Fest. We do the Portland Old Time Music Gathering in Portland.
You're all over the country.
Oregon, yeah.
Yeah.
The Hawaiian Steel Guitar Association Convention in both the mainland
and
in the islands.
Yeah. Sounds like you've found an occupation that gets you around a little bit away from having to mow the lawn every weekend
in
Michigan.
It's a bad habit I got into when I was in college. I needed to find a way that I could pay my way to go to festivals.
So the concerts are going on every 15 minutes.
That's correct.
Do you take breaks and go in to listen to particular groups?
Usually they have it piped into the
you hear it over the
lobby where I'm set up. Yeah, so okay. I could hear it.
So you really can't leave your do you have assistance or?
I could but I choose not to because people will tell you that nobody knows it like I do, and it's kind of hard. And I don't mean to.
That's
to
become
be,
apparent in our brief discussion here. I'll tell you. Yeah.
I don't mean to be aggrandizing with that.
Who's exposing themselves to as much of this kind of music as you are has got to, along the way, start to be able to form at least your own answer to that question about who's the best fiddler at the moment.
It depends.
I didn't ask.
Yeah.
I didn't ask. No, I know better than that. Anyway, John, I will drop by and see you at the booth, and I'm sure other people will drop by and see you at the booth and like that.
Mm-hmm.
We should mention, I think we just briefly mentioned that you have more than just CDs out there at the booth.
I do.
Can you
we
give us an idea of the range of what you bring along?
We have books that range from auto harp to voice.
Okay. Like fake books or instruction books or
some of each. There's collections that certain writers have put together that are essentially fake books, but they're written as they knew the tune or they know the tune. And but it's again, I try and remind people that that's only one version of the tune, and that's part of the folk process. That a lot of this stuff was passed on through oral tradition; it wasn't codified. And every time someone tries to codify something, it gets screwed up, you know.
Yeah.
But and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it just because you got to start somewhere.
No, I do a little Irish music, and the lyrics of Irish songs have first of all, they were all written by drunks anyway. So by the time they get to our shores, they have been changed so many times that no one knows what the original verses were at all.
But, that's right.
The important thing is just they always have to be funny and a little bit dirty. Makes a great Irish song.
Keeps life entertaining.
It certainly does. John, thank you so much. We're going to go out with a little of the Kentucky Clodhoppers here.
Sure.
And we'll see you over at the festival.
Thank you very much.
Little boy working on the road, little boy working. famous for.
Group. John is the guy who sits out in front of the music festival and has that huge stack of CDs that you can come out and paw through, along with books on music and all sorts of things. One of the fixtures at the Alaska country music thing that's going on this week, the Alaska Folk Festival over in Centennial Hall, started last night, fires up again at 7 o'clock tonight with the Alaska Youth Choir from Juneau opening things up, and goes until 10:30 when the Celtic Mothers and Daughters from Juneau will perform the final number of the evening. Jim Grammel is going to be emceeing. Ann Fuller is managing the stage, and you can hear it all on KRNN, our sister station. You can also hear it on our stream. If you go to the K2 webpage, you'll see a button there for KRNN, or you can listen on Channel 873 on cable, and stay tuned to the whole thing if you can't make it out to the Centennial Hall this evening. But go down and listen to some live music, because it certainly is a great festival this year.
Broadcast support comes from McDonald's, now serving strawberry and cream pie and featuring McCafe strawberry shakes. McDonald's is open daily in the valley at 2285 Trout Street.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 10th of April, 2012. It's the birthday of the man who said, "Tourists don't know where they've been, travelers don't know where they're going." Paul Theroux, born in Medford, Massachusetts, 1941. After college, went in the Peace Corps, taught school in Malawi, and he wrote. And 10 years after college graduation, he had written 10 books, and it was the 10th that made his reputation, a book called The Great Railway Bazaar, a travelogue of his 4-month trip across Asia. His advice for aspiring writers: leave home. Because if you stay home, people will ask you questions that you can't answer. They say, "What are you going to write? Where will you publish it? Who's going to pay you? How will you make a living?" If you leave home, no one asks you questions like that. His advice for aspiring travel writers is the same: leave home, but without a companion, and never by plane. Theroux prefers trains. He said, "Ever since childhood, I have seldom heard a train go by and not wished I was on it." It's the birthday of Anne Lamott, born San Francisco, 1954. She was an alcoholic, an addict, who went into rehab, became a Christian, started teaching writing, published a journal of the first year of her son's life called Operating Instructions, came out in 1993 to great acclaim. Anne Lamott, who says, "Nothing can break the mood of a piece of writing like bad dialogue. My students are miserable when they are reading an otherwise terrific story to the class and then hit a patch of dialogue that is so purple and expositional that it reads like something from a childhood play by the Gabor sisters. I can see the surprise on my students' faces, because the dialogue looked okay on paper, yet now it sounds as if it were poorly translated from their native Hindi. It was on this day, 1925, F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby was published. He had a hard time coming up with a good title. Some of his ideas were Among Ash Heaps and Millionaires, On the Road to West Egg, and The High Bouncing Lover. A month before, he'd asked his editor, Maxwell Perkins, to change the title from The Great Gatsby to either Trimalchio or Gold-Hatted Gatsby. Perkins said no, and then Fitzgerald wanted it changed to Under the Red, White, and Blue, but it was too late. And it's the birthday of William Hazlitt, born in Maidstone, England, 1778. When he was 19, he walked 10 miles to hear Samuel Coleridge, and then he walked 200 miles to visit Coleridge at home. He became a journalist and essayist for newspapers. He wrote about art and sports, including boxing, drama, politics. He reviewed books, and then he took up lecturing, which was lucrative. He was an innovator in the development of the personal essay, the essay written in the first person, more discursive, free to wander away from the main theme. William Hazlitt, who said, "Without the aid of prejudice and custom, I should not be able to find my way across the room." Hazlitt said, "The most silent people are generally those who think most highly of themselves." Here's a poem for today by Carl Dennis entitled Ingratitude. Spring, I remembered you all these months. I spoke of the green yard under the snow to my slumped visitors. I sobered the giddy neighbors. You may think you're still happy, I cautioned, but recall the tea roses, the lost leaves of the dogwood tree. But now you have fallen upon us, spring, without warning, so much greener than I remembered. Friends I kept from forgetting laugh at me as they run outside for falling so short in your praise. Ingratitude by Carl Dennis from his New and Selected Poems, 1974 to 2004. Published by Penguin Books, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, written by Heather McPherson. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Banjo there, licked by, and the group that's the showcase group for the Alaska Folk Festival this year. Tennessee Mafia Jug Band's in town. They're doing workshops. They're playing for some dances. They're doing all kinds of stuff this weekend. And a big concert. I think they play it out, of course, to the end of the show. So, amazing group. Well worth coming in. Their big gig is at 9 o'clock on Sunday evening, but I think they've got another slot somewhere else in the thing if they've done the traditional setup for the music festival. Tune in on Wednesday. Jeff will be here. He's got guest Christina Pollock with Alaska Pella. Becca Parks will come in to talk about the Lego League Corporate Challenge. Tom Thornton and Harold Martin will be here talking about a new book on Tlingit landmark place names. You are in tune with KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO is also on these translators. We're at 103.1 in the valley in Auk Bay on K276 AF. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we transmit on K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on 88.1 and K201 AM. We serve Hoonah on 91.9 MHz from K220 BT. And Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, we're on K210 AS at